Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Stephen Cuevas in for Larry Mantle. He's back tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. Well, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders won big in the Nevada caucuses this past Saturday. Nevada also happens to be about a third Latino. And according to recent estimates, more than half of Nevada's Latino vote went to Sanders. Heading into the 2020 election cycle, Latinos appear to have more muscle than ever at the ballot box. And that muscle is strongest in the Democratic primary contest, especially in states like Nevada, Texas, and right here in California. I'm here with Sonia Diaz, founding executive director of the Latino Policy and Politics Initiative at UCLA. It's a think tank. She's also a practicing civil rights attorney, to talk about what we learned about the Latino vote in Nevada and what it means for us here in California and many other states on Super Tuesday. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, first off, the Latino Policy and Politics Initiative at UCLA has been compiling some preliminary data analyzing Latino voters' preferences coming out of Nevada. What are some of the big takeaways so far?
Yeah, one of the things that we're seeing is that Latinos are ready and excited to participate in this process, particularly the primary contest. And there's some clear winners, not only in Nevada, but also what we saw in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And national polls have been pretty clear that Latino registered voters are leaning towards Senator Bernie Sanders. Our research at UCLA found that to be true in both Iowa and Nevada. In Nevada, our research on Latino registered voters in the caucus showed that Latino voters preferred Senator Sanders almost by 70%.
Why?
I think that there's a few reasons. Two, I'll go ahead and proffer, is that there's an explicit desire to engage the Latino electorate on behalf of the Sanders campaign. Mm-hmm. So in Nevada, opening their first campaign office in East Las Vegas was a sign that the Latino vote is important. And that the way in which that campaign was going to be successful in the primary is by engaging Latino voters. And that was pretty clear. The second thing is Latino voters have been polled about what they care about. What are the issues that matter most to them? They're similar to a lot of issues that matter to most American voters. Healthcare, the economy, making sure that there's opportunity for housing, for living wages. But something that is also clear in the polling, going back to the 2018 midterms to today, is Latino voters have voiced a desire for a candidate that is going to lead with diversity, that is going to address the rampant discrimination and xenophobia occurring, and the target on Latinos' shoulders that is coming out of the White House. And I think that's why the Sanders campaign has been so successful. He's engaged that electorate by doing the work on the ground, and he's also speaking to Latino issues.
Do you know how that support among Latinos for Sanders compares to 2016 when he was running against Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, this is a great point, and I think it's a learning lesson for all of us. What are the lessons learned from the 2016 campaign, and how do we transform them? Senator Sanders had a lot of criticism about not having a diverse staff at all echelons. He also didn't do as well as Clinton in some of the states, particularly in Nevada and other Southwest states, with the Latino vote. And fast forward to today, he has changed the descriptive representation of his staff. He has folks from all walks of life embedded into his campaign organization. His campaign has said and been on the record that they're hiring locally, that they are hiring from social justice community-based organizations. And ultimately, he's doing the work to expand the electorate rather than simply persuade voters not to vote for Trump.
Are you Latino?
I am.
I was asking the callers. Are you Latino? Are you voting? I want to hear from you. Who are you voting for this Super Tuesday and why? Which candidates are attractive to your family, your friends, and why? And what do you think accounts for Senator Sanders' popularity among Latino voters right now? And I'm with Sonia Diaz, researcher at UCLA. Actually, she's the director of the Latino Policy and Politics Initiative. Sonia, there's a nickname for Bernie that's popular among many Latino voters. It's Tio Bernie, Uncle Bernie. Why? How did that nickname come about?
Well, the nickname came about because he has some strong surrogates that identify as Latino and are really front and center on his campaign of thinking through strategy. So not only is there a moniker of Tio Bernie, which makes, you know, some voters really excited and they don't think it's his pandering, But I also understand that his campaign is doing local events of tamales with Theo Bernie. So really kind of egging on the cultural niches that are important to some voters depending on their racial background or age. And it seems to be working.
And do we actually have film footage of Bernie Sanders, you know, working his way around a tamale and knowing to take the husk out? Some people don't know. I'm just saying. There are many young, maybe first-time Latino voters who've turned 18 since 2016, when Donald Trump won the presidency, based in large part on his hardline immigration policies that many feel disproportionately affected people from Mexico, from Latin America, from Muslim-majority countries. They're now could be voting for the first time. Any idea where their allegiances lie?
Yeah, national polls about Democratic registered voters make clear that Senator Sanders is winning the under 40, irrespective of race, ethnicity. Mm-hmm. To the extent that we have new voters of color, for which we do, because communities of color are growing, and they tend to be young, especially Asian Americans and Latinos. So for Latinos in the United States, we're seeing an estimated 2 million Latino voters aging into the electorate every year. And what we do know about young voters in America is they typically don't vote at the same levels as older Americans. That said, there is a lot of mobilization. We see that in the advocacy around climate change coming from folks that are in kindergarten through 12th grade, but we're also going to see it in the ballot box.
And we have Jose on the line. He moved here from El Salvador, and he's voting for Sanders. Well, he'll tell us why. Jose. And I think we don't have Jose.
I moved here. Hello?
Yeah, please go ahead.
I moved here about 13, 14 years ago. I have family members who are undocumented in this country. Been living here longer than I have. And I can tell you that the reason why I'm voting for Sanders and the reason why they want me to vote for Sanders is health care. We believe that health care is a human right. And they have been dealing in the U.S. for decades without documents. But when they had to go see a doctor, they had to go to a charity, or they had to go to the one guy that kind of has a bunch of medications in the garage, and he believes that this might help you, and here, take your one today.
Jose, I'm wondering, other people in your social circle, your family, your friends, especially those who are older, how do they view Senator Sanders?
The only experience that I have will be from my mother, but you have to understand that El Salvador was never one of these quote-unquote socialist governments like Venezuela or Cuba or Nicaragua.
Right.
We have been dealing with super right-wing governments like dictatorships, and dictators being held by the U.S. either by training or by money. So we actually don't have a very favorable view of super right-wing politics.
That's right. When Senator Sanders is sometimes tagged as being a socialist akin to someone like Fidel Castro or Daniel Ortega,
yeah.
How do you view that?
I laugh because that just shows how very little, I believe, many Americans know about real politics outside the United States. I mean, Canada seems to have a social healthcare program that works very well, and we don't call them socialists or communists, right? But the only two examples that people always point out is Cuba and Venezuela. Yeah, those are very extreme, and those are actually dictatorships, right? But Cuba, when we talk about UK, Canada, France, Germany, how come we don't call them dictatorships? It's just funny to me.
Well, Sonia Diaz, Jose gave us a lot to work with there. Let me get your comment on some of what he had to say.
Yeah, I think that this resonates with what we're seeing in the polling of Latino registered voters. Healthcare is paramount. It strikes me as really interesting to hear from Jose and how he thinks that everybody should have access, and that's absolutely true. Here in California, we saw two recent policy proposals that are going to address that, particularly for undocumented Californians. One is that undocumented young adults are now having access to the ACA. State subsidies. And then in Governor Newsom's budget that he released in January, older adults that are undocumented over the age of 65 will now have health insurance and health care, which is huge. What he's talking about, though, that everybody has access is obviously something that both Senators Warren and Sanders are discussing. They do think that there should be Medicare for all. This was a big issue in Nevada. As you may recall, the Culinary Union decided to not endorse a candidate for the Democratic primary. In fact, there was a lot of coverage. Jennifer Medina from the New York Times did a podcast asking both leadership and then union members how they felt about that. And what we heard from some of the union members is that they believe that everybody should have health care, that they have wonderful, fantastic health care that they fought for, you know?
Yeah, and no voting demographic is a monolith, of course. And immigration obviously isn't the only thing on the minds of Latino voters. In addition to health care, as you and both Jose were referencing there, what are some of the other top issues on the minds of Latino voters?
I think a big one is the economy. So there's a huge issue in terms of pay inequality generally. We see this that Latinas in the United States get the least amount of money per dollar compared to white males. And that has only continued. We have seen it increase over time in terms of the gap and not decrease. We also understand that there's a need for economic mobility that really supports the country's demographic that has the highest participation in our labor force, Latinos. And they, frankly, aren't getting access to the type of capital for their small businesses and also the type of capital to own homes or to deal with widespread income inequality. California, for one, has a huge issue on scarcity of housing and people that are housing insecure. Latinos are no different. So speaking to the issues of how people can actually afford to live while they work. And for Latinos, they work.
I think it's important to point out that, you know, all the current front runners are white. I wonder if things would be different if, say, former U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Julian Castro was still in the race.
Yeah, so I always think, what does the data and what does the science say? And early on for national polls of Latino registered voters, Secretary Castro was, you know, in the top four. He wasn't the first, the second, or the third choice amongst Latino registered voters, but he was there. And recognizing that his campaign did not have a lot of resources, wasn't raising the money, but he did stay in longer than some of his other peers, he did make an impact in moving the dial and thinking through some policies that I think spoke not only towards Latinos, but to Americans of color.
We know that the Latino population is on the rise in the U.S. It's certainly on the rise here in California, with a population around 40%. Has California moving its primary to Super Tuesday affected the way Democratic candidates campaign?
Yeah, I think, in fact, it's going to affect who is going to be the nominee from the Democratic Party to the White House. Frankly, having California vote in March instead of June, when things are already decided, are going to shape everything. We have the most delegates to give and to award, and that's going to occur not only for us on Super Tuesday, but also states like Colorado and Texas.
And what can you tell us about how the different structural changes in voting in California, for example, the voting centers might influence turnout among Latinos?
Yeah, you know, our elected officials and particularly our Secretary of State are really looking at expanding access to the ballot. And this is important. It's in stark contrast to other states that are voting on Tuesday, especially Texas, who wants voter ID, wants to gerrymander, wants to do vote dilution. Here in California, we're saying, hey, young folks, we want you to vote. We're going to have a voting center at UCLA that's going to be open for days prior to the election. We're going to have automatic voter registration. You all are on the rolls. We are going to work with your absentee ballot. All of this is really important to try and make it easier for people to cast a ballot, which is not always easy if you're working on the shift economy or you don't have childcare or transportation. And this is really phenomenal. Colorado is also a state that wants to expand the franchise, wants to make it easier to vote. But as we see going on in this country, there are states that are really trying to fundamentally create barriers to the ballot box.
Before we went live here, you and I were kind of sifting through the tea leaves Tuesday and how the different candidates might do on Tuesday. What is your sense of where their allegiances may lie Tuesday?
Yeah, a lot of it is who's been visiting California and who's taking it seriously. We know that Mayor Pete and Senator Sanders have been here often and frequently. There's other candidates that have not made a visit to the state for several weeks. We also know that the primary is important, but still requires field work and organizing and door knocks. So big media buys are not necessarily going to persuade voters to vote for that candidate. It's really about going out into the community, especially for unlikely voters or new voters that are new to the electorate, to actually hear from candidates and hear from campaigns and be asked of their vote. I think that we're going to see that that method is really transforming who comes to the ballot box and who they select.
Sonia Diaz is founding executive director of the Latino Policy and Politics Initiative at UCLA. She was talking with us about the Latino vote in the 2020 election. Sonia, thank you so much. Coming up next, why a Bloomberg reporter hacked his editor's computer. But first, this short break.